Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's the Green Party candidate running to be State Attorney General Michael Sussman. Michael H. Sussman is an attorney from Orange County. He's a 1978 honors graduate of Harvard Law School, and he's been a civil rights attorney and trial lawyer in the Hudson Valley since the 1980s. When, as lead counsel for the Yonkers branch of the NAACP, he helped end racial segregation in the city of Yonkers public schools. Michael Sussman, welcome to the Capital Connection.
Thank you. Good to be with you and those listening.
So tell me about why you chose the office of Attorney General to run for.
Because it's the office that most fits my qualifications. I'm not a person running for many offices, as one of these candidates does every year or every other year, a different office, and say they're best qualified for that office. I've been a trial lawyer for 40 years out of school. I went to the Justice Department. I went to the NAACP National Office. I've been doing what's called public law litigation for 40 years. And that's the kind of litigation the Attorney General's office has to be doing. So yep. I'm fit for the position, and that's why I'm doing it.
And what did you do when you went to the Justice Department? You just made reference.
I was in the Civil Rights Division, which was called the Honors Program, out of Harvard, and started in October of 1978. I prosecuted major housing discrimination and school desegregation cases across the United States. I stayed there until May of 1981. In February of 1981, you probably remember this, William French Smith, the Attorney General just appointed by Mr. Reagan, said that the most imperiled group, the group that we had to focus on in the Civil Rights Division, were, quote, white males, close quote. He said that in Philadelphia at his maiden address to the American Bar Association. That was enough for me. I knew that was not why I was in the Civil Rights Division, though. Yeah. I am a white male. It wasn't why I thought that we needed the Civil Rights Division. So I went to the NAACP National Office in New York and took up the same work.
And what'd you do there?
Well, I was assigned upon coming to the Yonkers case. I did voting rights cases around the country. I developed the Yonkers case. I tried the Yonkers case in 1983 and 84. Before the Honorable Leonard Sand in the Southern District of New York. We had a 92-day trial. I handled about 40 appeals deriving from that trial, including several in the Supreme Court of the United States, won all of them. Ended up suing the state of New York, getting $300 million from the state of New York in 2002, many years later, for the desegregation efforts and the remediation of vestiges of segregation that were adjudicated to exist in that school district. Developed housing plans to desegregate housing in the city of Yonkers, and of course that was very acrimonious, bringing the city nearly to bankruptcy in June of 1988. The city refused to comply with federal orders, et cetera, et cetera. So I litigated every manner of civil rights case for them between 1981 and when I left in early 86, when I started my own law firm in Yonkers next to City Hall, because I knew I had to be there for the remedial process.
So let's go back to the Yonkers case. You know, basically, you were dealing with a segregated school system, right?
What we did in Yonkers, just to be clear, was we sued the city of Yonkers and the school district and ultimately HUD and the state. The major innovation of the case was holding the city responsible for the segregation in its schools. That had never been done before.
Right.
And that was the purpose and way of the litigation, and that's what we accomplished. We dealt with the housing patterns in the city, and we dealt with school segregation and the remedial orders with Judge Sand.
So let me ask you a lawyer question, Michael Sussman.
Sure.
You won, and you won big. Are you satisfied with the results? In other words, you wanted to make it fairer for people of color, for example. Has that happened in Yonkers?
It has happened to some extent. I'm not entirely satisfied with the results, and I wasn't entirely satisfied with the pace of the process. I worked on that case, Alan, for 26 years. Not quite as long as Alex Polakoff in the Chicago Gautreau case dealing with the housing segregation of the Chicago public housing projects, but a very long time. And I'm not satisfied entirely with the results. But the primary result to me is the truth-telling process. Many people believed that Northern segregation was, quote, de facto, some sort of fact of life, wasn't created by our decisions with regard to how we were going to structure our institutions. I think in the Yonkers case, I was able to prove that entirely false. There were 40 years of decisions chronicled in the 700-page decision by Judge Sand. 40 years of decisions affecting housing and schools and ensuring their segregation and inferior education for minority students. We were able to expose that. And exposing it created in Yonkers a political movement which brought us Andrea Stewart Cousins, for example, who's now the leader of the Democrats in the state Senate. She comes from Yonkers. She was a product of this lawsuit, essentially. So it's a truth-telling process as much as it is a particular concrete result. If you look at Yonkers between 2002 and 2007, when I got that $300 million, scores radically increased in the schools. If you look today at Yonkers compared to Buffalo, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, you'll see test scores in Yonkers, although still dismal, 3 and 4 times higher than those of those other urban centers. So yes, we've had an effect in terms of schools and housing integration in the city, but for me, frankly, the major issue is telling the truth about racial segregation and bias.
Okay, got it. And that leads me to ask another question, which is that there are those people in New York City. Now, you're running for Attorney General of New York State, but certainly the city will be part of your purview should you win.
Absolutely.
We now see that there are attempts to equalize the people who come into the public schools and take it from the major public schools, Science, Stuyvesant, Brooklyn Tech, and take away the idea of a meritocracy and instead say, okay, there has to be a number of guaranteed places
for seats.
I'm so sorry.
Right.
Seats for minority students. What do you make of that one?
Well, I don't think that it's really the right approach. I think that the issue here is that we need to prepare young people from a very early age so that they can attain membership, if you will, in these most elite schools. I don't think we should have barriers to entry to people based on their race. I think that is absurd. But I also think that we need not simply to say when a student is in eighth grade and not prepared to be in that school, you're going to that school. That makes no sense to me. What makes more sense is to ensure as children progress, that those who have capabilities are identified. You know, what I found, and when I was at Harvard, I started tutoring in Chinatown, which was by then almost entirely black in terms of the schools there. And what I found was teachers of all races had very low expectations for minority students. What I hear today when I visit schools is very much the same thing. So to me, there has to be a very thoroughgoing change in the way we approach each child. And I believe if we do that, there'll be children of every group who are going to Stuyvesant and all the best schools. I don't think artificial approaches, which really don't solve the problem, are useful.
Well, I certainly agree with you. Let me move on. We're losing time here. Don't be sorry. It's great. I want to ask you a number of questions. You're running for Attorney General. We have a governor of New York State who is surrounded by corruption. He rode into office on a charger and he said, I'm cleaning up Albany, and now it's as bad as it's ever been. What do you make of all of that?
Well, it's the motivation for my running. In 2017, I would have been the Orange County Democratic Party candidate for county executive, a position I'd run for in 2001. I have not sought public office since 2001. But I didn't run for Orange County executive as a Democrat in 2017 because I saw, for instance, the Legoland project. I saw the CPV project with Prococo. And I didn't just see them. I've been the lawyer for those groups opposing those projects. And I've seen major public projects, whether it involves Curious Joel, Crystal Run, the Prococo CPV, Legoland, all of those dominated by what I believe to be pay-to-play culture and corruption. And it really is what motivated me not to run, to switch parties, and to run for this position. I don't believe either political party can be in control of the remake of Albany's government. I think both of them are in collusion. I think you saw that with the whole state Senate situation for years under this governor and his father, frankly. And neither of them wanted to have progressive politics really take root in the state, in my opinion. They both wanted to put a cap on it. And the way they did that, the way they clamped down on it, was with regard to the state Senate. This is an overwhelming Democratic Party state. We all know that. I think corruption's at the root of a lot of cynicism. I think people, when I campaign and go on the street and I say there's a duopoly of corruption in New York State, 90% of the people who I speak to nod their head and say yes.
Okay, but wait, listen, I'm with you. I've written it. I said it again and again. I couldn't agree more. But now I want to ask you something. The leading candidate for attorney general, I believe, is Tish James. She's doing the best in the polling, although, you know, there are others who are doing okay in the Democratic primary. Unfortunately, you're not running in the Democratic primary, so we don't really know how you're doing. We can intuit it, but we don't know. But James has been endorsed by this governor who is surrounded by corrupt people.
It's worse than that, though.
Yes.
He didn't just endorse James. What he said to James was, although you came up with the Working Families Party, remember when Tish James first got elected in Brooklyn, she was a Working Family Party candidate, not a Democratic Party candidate. That's a party of origin. He said to her, essentially, if you take that party's nomination in 2018 for attorney general, get out of my party.
And he was mad.
I'm not endorsing you.
Stop. And he was mad. But his motives were that they had denied him of the designation. So I think that's pretty obvious. So that's why, you know, you have to tell her.
But here's the issue. I'm not concerned about his motives. I'm concerned about her reaction.
Sure.
Her reaction could have been, that's my party of origin, and I'm staying with that party, and I'm happy to run as a Democrat, too. That's not what she did.
Right.
What she did was repudiate her party of origin, which suggests to me a kind of subordination and a willingness to subordinate herself to the governor, which is what makes me concerned. You see, there's another problem here. People view the attorney general's position as a stepping stone to be governor or some other position, right? That's been the tradition here. I'm too old for all that, and I don't have those sorts of ambitions.
How old are you now that you're raising?
I'll be 65 my next birthday.
A mere child. A mere child. Okay? Go ahead.
Right, a mere child. But I'm too old for anything beyond this. Here's the point.
Yeah.
I want to see someone who's attorney general, who's independent of these political parties, because the two political parties, as I mentioned earlier, have a great interest in sweeping under the rug everything really that's been going on. They have no interest in transparency. They just don't. You can't construct a logical argument that says they do. They don't. And that's to their interest. And politics has become in New York a vested business like corrections, like any other vested business. The people in it, and we see this with the Skelos matter. I mean, he has a position of power, and he essentially wants to pass the perquisites of that to his son. Okay, you listen to those conversations. That's what I get. I'm a powerful guy. Here's my son. You see it in our county with Mr. Bonasik, and Mr. Bonasik running a law firm with his son. I mean, this is the way it goes. And there's nothing wrong with it inherently, but the way it's operationalized here is a pay-to-play culture, cozying up, and it goes totally across party lines. You've been around long enough to know that.
I sure have.
And therefore, if you're trying to clean it up to say we're entrusting that to someone of the same ilk who has political ambitions and is therefore dependent on his or her political party to advance, you're going to get nowhere. Look, Cuomo every year starts the session by talking about campaign finance reform, doesn't he? You watch the same speech as I do every year. And there's cascading applause and then nothing significant happens, whether it's the LLC loophole, whatever it may be. We don't have real campaign finance reform in New York. We don't have public expenditures for elections at any meaningful level on a statewide level. Why? Because the way it works now, both parties go to their corporate sponsors, and both of them are able to put whoever they want up. And people like me, I mean, we were left out because the corporate sponsors are not interested in me. It doesn't matter that I went to Harvard Law School. Who cares? It's what I think and believe and have done for 40 years. It's not the same things they would like done. I understand that.
Where did you live when you got into Harvard? Where was your home? Where were you raised?
I grew up in Brooklyn. I grew up in Flatbush. My parents, at the age of when I was about 12, did what many Jewish families did, which was to move to Long Island. I went to Hewlett High School. I was president of the student government, editor of the newspaper, championship debater. I went to Amherst College after the University of Chicago. I graduated from Amherst in 1975, and then I went to Harvard Law School.
Wow. Now, you were among other people. You came out and you've lived this life of challenging the system. How do you relate to the people that you went to law school? What do you remember about them?
That's a really good question. And I Charles Ogletree was my classmate and my moot court partner at law school. Charles and I were dear friends in law school, and you know, we've talked about it some since. Lloyd Blankfein was in my class, the head of Goldman Sachs. Michael Chertoff was in my class. We called him the Dark Knight, Homeland Security.
Too close for comfort, Chertoff.
Exactly. But the point is, people have made their own choices. Everyone uses their talents and abilities and makes their choices. I made choices. I left Brooklyn. My father said later, when I came back to the NAACP in 1981, I bought a house in Flatlands, a neighborhood in Brooklyn near Canarsie. And when I finally bought a farm up in Orange County in 1985, my father said, "Why are you leaving Brooklyn? This is your political base." And I said, "You know, Dad, we have to get beyond our ethnic group, our racial group. We have to move into areas where we may not be comfortable." I moved to Orange County. Yeah, there aren't very many Jews in Orange County. When I ran for county executive in 2001, people made fun of me because I have a Harvard-trained lawyer. People asked me questions directly about my religion. When I first ran for the town board in 1989 in Chester, the leading landowner in Chester told me, "We don't need Jews in this town. Why are you running?" So I understand, and I wanted to be in a diverse environment. I wanted to be where people were, if you will, different from the way I grew up. It was important to me to understand what mattered, to understand the farmers in Pine Island, the Polish farmers who developed the whole farming culture here that's integral to New York State and to Orange County. Most productive farmers in the world, probably, with their onion crop, their celery crop, et cetera.
I'm glad I asked the question, but I want to move on because we only have 7 minutes and I'm having too much fun.
Go right ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm having too much fun. Don't be sorry. You're doing great. Let's talk about the gerrymander a little bit. It's an awful situation in which, you talk about going to other countries and getting democracy there, and we let the leaders look up at a computer and say, "Draw me districts where we can't lose." This is unbelievable.
You know, Alan, I brought the first partisan gerrymandering case, which won in the Supreme Court of the United States and is ignored repeatedly. That's called Davis versus Bandemir. You're a political scientist. The case went to the Supreme Court in the mid-1980s. It was out of the state of Indiana. I represented the NAACP. I worked with a guy named Ted Bone who represented the Democrats. And we went to the Supreme Court, and we won that case, and it banned partisan gerrymandering under the 14th Amendment. Check it out.
Yes, the brilliance of the case was that it was done specifically, as I remember it, to make sure that people of color didn't get a fair shake.
Exactly. And I went and I took the depositions in that case, the head of the state Senate, Republican, head of the state Assembly, Republican, governor, Republican. I put that testimony before the Supreme Court of the United States. And, you talk about why you run for attorney general. I've had 40 years of experience in litigating in the federal courts and the state courts, very big cases around the country, but particularly in our state. You know, we had a battery test in New York. I don't know if you remember this. In the early 2000s, Pataki instituted a new promotional system in New York State Civil Service. It was a never validated test. Means they just gave a test, like an IQ test, and said, "Anybody who wants to get a promotion in New York State, you have to do well on this test." A test, in order to be used for promotional purpose, has to be validated. It never was, and had a profound racially disparate impact. I went to court on behalf of 4,700 state employees and got that test enjoined and ultimately thrown out, and I got $45 million for those employees. I have a track record of litigating major cases. I'm not interested in the attorney general being a political stepping stone or a training ground for people who've never litigated in those leagues. And, you look on the computer-assisted research program, Alan, and you can do this. You have it in your office. You push in Zephyr, push in Tish, push in Sean, push in any of these candidates, and you're going to find they've never litigated a case in federal court.
And by the way, while we're on the subject, Sean Patrick Maloney is running not only for attorney general, but he's also running for Congress. Can you parse that one for me for a minute?
It's very simple. Shortest answer I'll give: pure selfishness and ego. Terrible for his party, my former party, who's trying desperately to keep or get control of the House. It's a purple district. He's won three times. Where's he going? The Democrats don't have anybody to replace him. They're going to put somebody in 6 weeks before, right after the Democratic primary, should he win for the attorney general position. It's an atrocious situation, and he should never have done it.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the environment. I know that this is a big part of your program as attorney general. Where do we need to go?
Well, here's what we have. We have a moratorium on fracking, December 2014, and since then, we've had a profound expansion throughout the state of what's called the fracking infrastructure. That is pipelines despoiling farmlands, forest areas. All sorts of communities are in rebellion against this. They thought we weren't doing fracking. Now we're inducing fracking from other states after we've determined it's too dangerous to do. Absolutely incoherent. And it's not going to get us to less dependency on fossil fuels. It's facilitating dependency on fossil fuels. So as Attorney General, my view is I have to protect public health and safety. It's one of the most important things I have to do. And I haven't made this clear in this interview, but this is part of a broader issue. I'm not interested in defending discriminatory state agencies or state agencies that behave in environmentally or health ways that are injurious to people in our state. I don't think the Attorney General, I think we have an independent Attorney General, different from Washington, where the person's appointed by the president. No, that's not what we have. We have someone elected, and that elected individual has to look out for the people of the state. So environment's going to be a huge issue. I'm not going to sit around and wait while environmental despoilation occurs. I'm going to enjoin it. That means you go to court, you show to the court what's happening, you say this violates X, Y, or Z, whatever the environmental conservation law is, and you stop it.
Okay, I got 3 minutes left, and I want to use them well. Upstate versus downstate, is it a fair formula that we've been using, or do you think the people upstate are getting, well, basically screwed?
Well, the people upstate feel they're getting screwed. I mean, I think that when you travel upstate through many of the rural communities, as I have, you see profound immiseration and a lack, frankly, of hope. And I think that I'm running for Attorney General. I'm not running for governor. I can't present the platform.
Yeah, but you're going to be AG of the whole state.
I am going to be AG of the whole state, and certainly as AG of the whole state, I'm going to look out for the health and safety of the people there just as much as everywhere else. But what I'm saying is that the issues which we have to confront, how you create a sustainable agricultural market, in tourism in these communities. These are broad questions which have not been well addressed, in my opinion.
Okay, now we got two minutes. I'm going to name a couple of things very quickly. Guns.
Fewer.
In order to do that, you have to
enforce existing laws, and you have to make very clear, that the NRA is not going to control New York State gun policy or anything else. And I think Mr. Cuomo has stood up well to them, relatively well to them. But really what we have to have is a national policy, because state borders have no meaning with regard to guns. So you have to have a national approach, which we have to participate in as the Attorney General.
Okay, legalizing marijuana.
I favor it.
Is there any danger to it?
Of course there's a danger to it, but unbalanced, I favor it. I think that it's a proper way to go. I think when you have practices like we had during Prohibition, which are so widely violated, it simply diminishes and deprecates the law. Marijuana is pervasive in the society. We've got to recognize it, legalize it, get tax revenue from it, etc.
Well, let me just say, this has been a good interview. I've very much enjoyed it, and I'm astounded about how much I agree with you. But let me ask you very quickly, if you lose, and I expect you think you might lose because, you know, Greens don't win, will you have made a contribution?
I hope so. It depends on whether I'm allowed, as you're giving me the opportunity, to express my opinions in broad forums. I hope to debate the other candidates, and I hope to offer very concrete proposals for that office. And I hope I can make a contribution. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to speak today.
Our guest is Michael Sussman. He's the Green Party candidate for Attorney General. And Michael, congratulations on having the guts to do it, and I so appreciate your giving us this time.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.